bladder taken out?
I did.
Did you?
I lost a few ounces over the past week.
New weight loss program.
Yeah, really proud of it.
Listeners, we do not recommend this as a weight loss strategy.
The side effects are a little severe, right.
Well, welcome back to Beyond Sunday. With me, as always? No, who is this? Who are we? I'm Pastor David Bowser, filling in for Patrick Nazaroff, who is in Big Bend.
Right, but you're not really filling in because you're also always still here.
But I am filling in because I'm doing all his parts. I got the recording thing, and I got the news story, and I'm doing this part. I'm filling in.
To be fair, you offered no parts to me. So
would you like a part?
Yes.
Would you like to
next
find
time.
The news? next time,
I'll
Patrick's
be the news.
Gone. There you go. Yeah, Patrick is. I didn't say who I'm with.
No, you didn't.
See, that's why I can't do this.
Mystery guest.
With me, as always, is Elise McCarter.
Still here. Still pretty successful.
There we go.
It doesn't
now
work
we're
as
up.
Well when there's not three of us.
Yeah, it's just not the same ring. That's okay.
Anyway.
But yeah, Patrick is in Big Bend with our youth. They're on their summer mission trip doing some spiritual retreating into the wilderness and hopefully not getting attacked by bears.
They say spiritual retreating from a bear real quick.
From a bear. The only picture I've seen so far is of them real close to a bear.
Yes.
So hopefully they are well. By the time this comes out, they'll be back safely. So again, 2 weeks in a row, we'll have to edit something out if that does not go according
to
plan.
A bummer.
But I'm sure we're fine. So yeah, we're going to get into a story about Vince Lombardi today, which will be fun. That's not really the... Elise is laughing because
so
I kind of had to sell her on this. But that's going to be our launching point to talk about some fundamentals of our faith and what that might mean.
I hear people's radios clicking off all over.
You can hear it.
Like a ripple in the forest.
I think more people are interested in Vince Lombardi than you give credit
for. Okay, bye.
Yeah, really? All right. But first, I've got a news story.
The news.
Yeah, there we go. All right, so I'm not going to read the headline because the headline gives away the fun fact of this.
Okay,
so this is from Warsaw, Poland. This happened just over the the weekend. Warsaw is unexpected. Where did you expect it to be?
No, okay. I wasn't thinking Poland.
All right, fair enough. But so this is about a flower that blooms only every so often.
Okay, It
is fairy tale material, and this was in a conservatory in Warsaw, Poland, and it's the endangered
with the pipe
endangered Sumatran Titan arum. Mm. No guarantee that I'm saying that right because I don't know. People waited in line literally for hours, like overnight, waited in line, hundreds if not thousands of people to see this rare bloom. It actually is. I'm going to show you a picture, Elise, and maybe we'll try to post them. But it's a pretty cool flower. Like it's big.
That's huge.
It's like huger than a person.
Yeah.
Huger? Bigger than a person. Taller than a
person.
It's
like a little Shop of Horrors.
Yeah.
Like Venus flytrap thing.
Yeah. It's like giant and pretty colors and everything like that. But it has a unique feature. You ready?
Does it smell to high heaven?
A giant foul-smelling blossom, also known as the corpse flower, went into rare and short bloom at a botanical garden in Warsaw while crowds who waited for hours came to see it. It emits a dead body odor in order to attract pollinating insects that feed on flesh.
Okay.
I'm just going to go ahead and say... that if that's my life goal, like if my goal is to smell like a dead body to attract insects that eat dead bodies, I'm done. I'm out.
Yeah.
Like, evolution, take me now.
Right.
I'm good.
Something is badly wrong with you.
Yeah.
Bath and Body Works, don't get any ideas. We don't want this nuisance.
The new candle. Yeah. That's a shame, too, because a candle called like the Sumatran Titan, like really, that'd be a beautiful
name. Sumatran Titan is pretty cool.
Great
yeah.
name for
yeah.
a candle. Terrible odor, right? You do not want to light that candle.
This sounds like it is actually a fairy tale about a very sad giant that just wants to get close to people. Aww. But smells bad.
I think we've got your next novel.
Yeah. Short story for sure.
A sad giant who smells bad. Maybe he can take a shower.
That feels too easy.
Yeah?
Yeah. You gotta fill twice.
Because the showers are
succeed.
Short and he doesn't fit in the shower. That's probably why he can't take a shower.
It could be.
Yeah.
Really... So, all right. I'm writing notes.
I'm kidding. I just wrote your next masterpiece.
Yeah.
You're welcome.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't have any other interesting things about this. I just thought it was hilarious that there's a giant bad smelling flower. It apparently only grows in the, what are those called? Rainforest of Sumatra.
Mm-hmm.
That's the only place where you can find it, and it's super endangered there. But you can find it
in conservatories
in Poland and in England and other places around the world. But their blooms are like very sporadic, which is why it's such a big deal to like come up and see it. It's not like a every month thing.
I do have questions about people that waited in line overnight for a bad smelling flower.
Yeah, especially when you could have watched it online.
Sure.
Like they had a live
That's
stream.
That's why
of
we
it.
Have Zoom.
Uh-huh. Yeah, you could see this flower. Yeah.
See it without actually having to experience it in its entirety.
I mean, I guess you could have taken a nose clip, right? And they have like, but then you like taste it. Have you ever done that when like the smell is so bad that you like cover up your nose, but you can still taste the smell in your mouth?
Ugh. Nothing like the taste of corpse in the morning.
That got weird. Yeah. All right, moving on.
Okay.
To our topic. That's our news story.
To Vince Lombardi.
To Vince Lombardi. So, do you know who Vince Lombardi is?
I do now that I had to read that article.
I'll take that.
Yeah.
Did you know who Vince Lombardi was before this?
Sports ball dude. I mean, sports I knew, dude, like, this is a name that people talk about and seem to care about. That's really the extent of my knowledge of Vince Lombardi.
That's cool. So we'll give you, listeners, we'll give you a quick refresher, right? Vince Lombardi was a coach for the Green Bay Packers, which is a football team, not just a sports
Thank
ball.
Thank you.
But yeah, so he was a coach for the Green Bay Packers back in the 50s and 60s.
Okay.
Is now a very famous coach. There's a Lombardi trophy that is named for him and other things. Very famous, made it into the Hall of Fame and all sorts of stuff. But this is a story about him. And so I'm going to read, this is from James Clear's website. It's like a little short wisdom articles that you can get, jamesclear.com. You can check that out. I'm going to read from his article really quick. It was July of 1961, and 38 members of the Green Bay Packers football team were gathered together for the first day of training camp. The previous season had ended with a heartbreaking defeat when the Packers squandered a lead late in the fourth quarter and lost the NFL championship, which was like the Super Bowl of the day, to the Philadelphia Eagles. The Green Bay players had been thinking about this brutal loss for the entire offseason, and now finally training camp had arrived. It was time to get to work. The players were eager to advance their game to the next level and start working on the details that would help them win that championship. And their coach, Vince Lombardi, had a different idea. Oh. Yeah. His first words, I'll say this, this is now quoting from When Pride Still Mattered, which is a biography about Vince Lombardi. He took nothing for granted, we say. He began a tradition of starting from scratch, assuming that the players were blank slates who carried over no knowledge from the year before. He began with the most elemental statement of all. Anybody, you want to guess?
Well, I read it, so well, it's
okay,
not,
but pretend you didn't read it.
For the people.
Yeah, for the people. What would you think the most elemental, I want to hear what your most elemental statement of football would be.
For some reason, I went to Dairy Queen as non-dairy ice cream. I don't know why.
There it is.
That's all that popped
Dairy
up. You're
Queen,
welcome.
Yeah, the most elemental piece of football, Dairy Queen, is non-dairy
ice cream.
Ice cream.
Yeah.
Wait, there's no dairy in Dairy Queen?
Supposedly. I don't know.
Wow.
It's like don't ask me why that is immediately what
it's
I
like,
went to.
It's like there's no chicken in McDonald's chicken nuggets, so they say.
Hmm.
I think that's mostly urban legend.
Yeah.
Anyway, he began with the most elemental statement of football of all. Gentlemen, he said, holding a pigskin, which
start
is...
Start your engines.
It's a different sport.
Yeah.
Holding a pigskin in his right hand, this is a football.
Mm.
And so the whole season
so
starts.
Profound.
Yeah, it is profound. And from this point, then he goes on. They would eventually win the NFL championship that year, crushing the New York Giants 37-0. No offense to the Giants, but 37-0 is a crushing defeat. Vince Lombardi would never again lose in the playoffs for the rest of his career.
Oh.
He never had another losing season in the rest of his career. And
it's like
this
Nick Saban back in the day.
Wow.
I know.
Throwing Nick Saban trash into our podcast.
I
see how it is.
I pay attention to college football. I'll say that.
And you did. You acted like you didn't know who Vince Lombardi was.
I don't know who Vince Lombardi is. I mean, I do
Whatever.
Now.
It's all just an act. I see it. No. It's a ruse.
I know Nick Saban because I think he made a deal with the devil. So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
that
sounds like a good podcast for another day. Anyway, so this is our theory. Right? A lot of other coaches have picked up on this since then, that you come back every season with these professional players who theoretically know everything about the game, right? They're not there to learn how to play football. This isn't Pee Wee League.
You pay them to play the football.
You pay them
well,
to play the football,
yes.
Right? You pay them to be really good at this stuff.
Yes.
And yet he said, we're going to go back and we're going to go to the most elemental thing. This is a football. This is the core of what we are about. And then he went through training camp and said, okay, this is how you tackle. And he had them do the same kind of form tackling drills that you would do in, like, I don't know, sixth grade, fifth grade, whenever you start playing tackle football.
I remember
right?
those, yeah.
All right. Some listener out there remembers those. But, you know, all of these basic things. This is how we're going to catch the football.
Yeah.
This is going to how we're going to block. This is and I think breaking the game down to those really elemental pieces, what it did for the Packers is that it gave them this leg up, this edge on the competition. Because there are so many things that other teams were just taking for granted, that we know how to do this thing correctly. And in fact, they're making these little mistakes that pile up over time.
Yeah.
And I think, and this is kind of what we're going to get into here, right? I think we do the same things with our faith. I think mm-hmm. there are core elemental, fundamental things of our faith that we kind of take for granted, especially when we're trying to talk to other people yeah. about our faith. And then we end up making little mistakes, you know, over time that kind right. of pile up. And suddenly we're like way off in left field, or we're getting blown out of the water right. in the playoffs, if you will. And it's all because of these little mistakes when we thought we had mastered this already. So maybe sure. we've been going to church our entire life, and all of a sudden we're like in our 50s and we're like, wait, you mean the Bible says what? Right?
Yeah, for sure.
Which
yeah.
is also a great game. Bible says what?
The Bible says what?
Yeah.
Can't wait to play that one.
It's lots of fun. Break it out at parties.
Right. Pencil it in Friday night. A very
particular type of party, but you know, it's fun.
A pastor party.
A seminary party. Yeah, it's true. Bible says what?
Anyway. Womp womp.
Ain't no party like a seminary party. Oh. Anyway, so I think it'll be fun.
Because a seminary party don't start.
Right. Oh. I think it'll be fun if we kind of just go through our own set
yeah.
of what do we think the elemental, fundamental pieces of our faith were. If we were to, if we were to bring together our championship quality team of Christians, and as their coach, which is already silly.
It's me.
Yeah, right. I made the team. Congratulations. Yeah. If we were going to bring them into the room, and as their coach, we were going to give them the most basic tenet of faith.
Okay.
The most fundamental elemental piece that okay. everything else is built on. Okay. Where do we start? What is the what is the equivalent of this is a football?
Well, I think traditionally we would probably say creation, right?
Okay. Like, all right. That's an interesting argument.
I mean, that's sort of the way that I feel like it's approached traditionally is that, okay, we are here because God created us
mm-hmm.
and everything kind of revolves around that or goes back to that.
So let me ask this question then, because if this is the fundamental piece of our
trap.
Faith, it's not a trap. This is just us thinking through this, right?
Okay.
It would be a trap if I said creation and then I made you answer a question.
Sure.
That would be a trap.
Right. And I would like to point out that I said I think traditionally
okay,
it is yeah. approached this way. I'm not necessarily sold on that being the fundamental piece, but
okay,
I do think that we sort of prop up a lot of other things based on God created the world.
I hear that. That makes sense to me. It does kind of become a foundational block mm-hmm. on which a lot of pieces of faith are built. I think for me, when I'm getting at the foundation fundamental of faith, my question is, where do we start, right? If I'm trying to explain Christianity to someone who has no idea about mm-hmm. Christianity, do I start with creation?
Right.
And I don't know. That's a fair point.
Yeah.
And so maybe for some, creation is that fundamental
maybe that's
faith.
Helpful.
And in which case, I think we should do a much better job of understanding and knowing creation.
Yeah.
Because I think we have a very unintentionally warped sense of what the Bible actually says about creation.
Right. Yes.
Yeah.
I think that would be one of the fundamentals that I've realized as I got older. I do not understand.
Right.
I know nothing about this.
I've actually been tackling people with my head down for years. And that's why I have all these head injuries.
Absolutely. That's what I was thinking. So, yeah.
We're just carrying forward the sports metaphor.
Thank you.
It's fine.
For the men listening to the podcast.
Hey, there are plenty of women who understand how to tackle properly, all
sure.
right?
Sure. Yes, I'm not one of them.
Right, but they're out there.
Yeah.
And they're listeners to this podcast.
Please write in if you are one of those women. I would like to hear from you.
We want to hear about it, yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
So, all right. Oh, I thought you had more.
No.
Okay, so.
Gosh.
So, creation, but we probably get creation wrong. Or we probably misunderstand
that. That feels fair. Okay. But I do think that that's sort of like
a fundamental piece. Yeah.
And I think especially when people are trying to explain or defend their faith, they automatically mm-hmm. kind of start there. Like, well, God made the world, so, you know, you have to believe
that's
in God because
yeah.
he put you here to begin with
right.
and X, Y, Z, and it kind of goes from there.
Yeah. So if you don't have that foundational piece, nothing else really does fall into place because
right.
Jesus doesn't matter if you're not first created by God.
And, you know, if God didn't create the world, then it kind of, I mean, I don't know that for me it necessarily matters one way or the other, but I can see how it would kind of fall apart because it's like, why? You know, why, if he didn't actually make all this happen, then why worship, you know?
Yeah.
Why acknowledge him as...
I think that's a fair argument. I mean, if this creation is not created by a benevolent creator who's mm-hmm. working to redeem all of humanity...
Right. What's he really in charge of? Yeah.
Then the rest of the story really does fall apart.
Right.
So I'm willing to roll with that.
Okay.
And, which is why for me, I think creation is central. I'm just not sure that it's like what I would call the foundation or the fundamental piece.
Right.
Right.
I would say it's not the fundamental piece of my faith.
Okay. Yes.
But I would say it's a basic tenet of Christianity.
Okay. Yeah. I can get behind that. Okay. I can support that. And it seems like something we should know more about than we do or re-understand, right?
Yeah.
That maybe we should reevaluate.
To be fair, we're not given like a whole lot of specifics
About creation?
Yeah.
Yeah.
We get a myth, basically.
That's true. So. You know, I did hear, and maybe this is something that we should come back and revisit on another episode, but I was just listening to a series from our friends over at the Bible Project.
Mm-hmm. Our friends.
The old
yes.
BP, right? Yes. Oh, not BP. We can't do that because that's another thing.
That's like the...
That's a gas station, yeah. Right? And I don't know if we have any friends over there.
Environmentalism.
Well, we're Exxon people here in this yes. area. So.
Yes. Some of us more than others.
Right. So anyway, but our friends at Bible Project just did a series on creation and talking about how the creation stories, particularly of Genesis, are really in conversation with the other creation myths and narratives of the ancient Near East. Mm-hmm. And so there's really interesting conversations to talk about how that biblical creation story stands alone and in his conversation and is in conversation with these other stories. And so that might be something worth revisiting another part. Because I think with as little as we feel like we have, there's actually a lot more there.
Yeah.
But we're so far removed from the context that we miss a lot of
it. Sure.
Which, you know, that's pretty much most of the Bible. But that's still
yeah. Well, I mean, when you think about it, the Bible is not supposed to stand alone as one source, right? There's so much happening at that point in time in history that it is supposed to, like you said, be in conversation with and as a counterpoint to and stuff like that. And we don't have any of that. We've kept the Bible, but we kind of threw out the rest of it and just relied on the Bible.
Well, and some of it's cultural, right? We didn't necessarily throw it out. The world just changed. Right. We had indoor plumbing and suddenly we had, you know,
the world was better. We don't need the manual on pooping in the desert.
Thank goodness. But yeah. All right. So creation would be one. What about, I mean, is the Bible just foundation? Is that like, do we walk in to say, this is a Bible? Is that the fundamental piece that we need to start with?
This is a Bible.
This is a Bible?
Yeah.
I mean, I'll hold up my notepad. Right. Is that helpful? Do we think that's a place to start?
Yeah, I mean, a place to start, I think then you get into biblical literalism versus,
that's true.
You know, inerrancy or being inspired or, you know,
all those different words.
Yeah. It's a lot of vocabulary.
Yeah. Elise is already tired.
Do I know what any of that means? Maybe, maybe not.
Hey, you said the right words, that's all that matters.
That's what I feel like a lot of Christianity is in America, is you say the right words because you've heard them since you were born.
Ooh, there's an interesting point. Yeah. All right, so fundamentals of faith, not
vocabulary.
Not that saying the right words are the fundamental faith, but I think there are vocabulary elements that we take for granted.
Yeah.
You know, this is something we talk about as a staff, as a staff at Lord of Life pretty often, because we use insider language unintentionally, right? Like we abbreviate Lord of Life as LOL.
Right.
And we have to realize, like, if we're putting this out to anybody that's outside of, you know, our little group of 15 or whatever, LOL does not mean Lord of Life, right?
It's, yeah, laugh out loud.
Or lots of love if you're my grandmother.
Aw, that's
we
sweet.
Love her. Yeah. But yeah, so, you know, it means something different in different contexts. And I think our vocabulary does the same thing. And so there are fundamental pieces of our vocabulary that we probably need to reclaim as well. Like, what do we really mean when we say sin?
Right.
And what do we really mean when we say grace?
Right.
And
have those definitions changed over time?
Ooh, yeah.
That's, to me, I'm a little bit fascinated with the usage of these terms and how we understand them as people.
That's a great point. I think that, I'm going to have to do a whole lot of thinking about that.
Deep dive time.
Yeah, ooh, goodness. I just got a headache thinking about it. But sin for sure. I mean, our understanding of sin has shaped and been shaped. Interestingly, I mean, we kind of have this famous understanding of sin as like this original sin idea that, oh, well, Adam and Eve sinned, and so everybody else since then, we're all born in sin, and, you know, the minute you take your first breath, you're a terrible human being that's due for damnation. And really that comes around in St. Augustine. I mean, there are some elements of this that he's drawing on from the biblical narrative, particularly from Paul. Man, I've just got something in my throat and can't get it out. Yeah. I apologize, listeners.
It's okay.
But there's some elements that St. Augustine is drawing on from Paul as far as, like, you know, sin came in through the one man, and so through the one man, all is redeemed. There's certainly elements of that, but we really trace our understanding of sin to St. Augustine several hundred years after Jesus, and not back to the way Jesus talked about sin or even the way that the Old Testament talks about sin for the most part. And so, yeah, that's an elemental biblical understanding of sin as opposed to just a church tradition. Conversation about sin would be that'd be a fundamental piece that I think we're probably missing there.
Yeah. You ever get the feeling that Jesus is like, he had one job, 200 years, that's all it took?
Yeah. There's a lot of times where I'm like, Jesus is looking down, just shaking his head. You're like,
you had to add to it and make it fancy.
Come on, people. This wasn't that difficult.
Gosh.
So I said this kind of in jest as we were prepping for this, but what about, you know, is this notion of who is Jesus, is that a fundamental piece of our faith that we are missing or overstepping or getting incorrect in one way or another?
I mean, I do think that who Jesus is and who we believe Jesus to be is a fundamental piece. I don't know. I might have lost my wording for this. I don't know how much of, outside of believing, you know, in his dual nature, mm-hmm. how much of that is a fundamental piece that we don't necessarily understand. I think maybe it has more to do with not understanding the things that he was about than understanding who he was.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. It does make sense. So I want to back up and give us a little vocabulary because we're throwing out some things that people might not. Okay. So you talked about dual nature.
Yes.
And when we're talking about dual nature, we're meaning
God and man.
Okay.
And
so fully God, fully human.
Yep.
Not part, not 50-50.
Right.
100% of each.
Yep.
Which does not make sense in the math world.
Yeah, nobody knows.
But it's true.
Yep.
Or at least it's what we believe, yep. right? Which I guess means it's true for us. I don't know how to,
I mean, also there's another piece of that would be Mary as well, especially with different faith traditions. Yeah, like the Catholic faith tradition, I think has a different approach to who Mary is than we do.
Yes.
So.
Yeah. Cause I mean, this gets complicated, mm-hmm. but for Jesus's birth to be incredible or to be holy, right? Mary somehow had to be already born without sin. And because of the doctrine of original sin, and all of us are born sinful, right? Yeah. Somehow Mary had to be born without that, even mm-hmm. though, yeah. So the Immaculate Conception, mm-hmm. I mean, we hear that and we actually, interestingly, Immaculate Reception is a football play that happened one time where somebody made a really incredible catch and they call it the Immaculate Reception.
That's cute.
Anyway, the Immaculate Conception, we often hear that and think that that means Jesus mm-hmm. as non-Catholics, but Catholics would tell you, no, the Immaculate Conception is Mary's conception because it's incredible that she is born without sin, even though it was through the standard process of birthing a child, which for everybody else apparently makes us sinful.
It's one of the basics that you should understand.
Right. But for everybody else makes us sinful. Somehow Mary was born through that without sin and so was able to be born blameless and so was able to bear the Son of God.
Okay.
So that's kind of but as Lutherans were kind of like, that seems
feels like there was some
unnecessary
sin in there somewhere.
It's not even that we want to say there's sin in there somewhere. Yeah. It just feels like we're adding a lot of extra stuff in here.
Yeah.
I mean, because even throughout Scripture, you can look at people that God identifies as righteous mm-hmm. or as blameless before God, right? And they were all born in the same way that everybody else was, and they all come after Adam and Eve. So the same original sin that affected Mary and everybody around Mary should have affected them too, and yet they were considered blameless or considered righteous, however we want to phrase those. So it just seems unnecessary.
Yeah.
Not to say that Mary was this like horrible sinful person.
Maybe she was.
Maybe.
Plot twist.
We don't know. But it seems unnecessary to center on that. But mm-hmm. I like this idea of, you know, centering on who Jesus was mm-hmm. As a fundamental piece of our faith. I mean, because there are elements that I think are simplistic, but are really essential. Like it's essential for me, for us to be able to have conversation to say Jesus was not a Northern European, blonde-haired, blue-eyed, white, middle-aged male, right? He was a 30-something, brown-haired, probably dark-skinned Palestinian person, right? I mean, he was from that region of the world. And so he would not look like most of the paintings that you find of him in Lutheran churches.
Also presumably not hot. We've been through this before on the podcast.
Have we had hot Jesus conversations?
Yes, we've had hot Jesus conversation. It says that there was nothing about him that would attract other people to him. So you can hang up your Adonis Jesus on your stained glass window.
Sure.
Don't hang him up. That is a bad choice of words.
That already been done. Taken care of.
Yeah.
Do people have Adonis Jesuses? Is that a thing?
I mean, I feel like the depiction of Jesus is supposed
to be... Like Fabio Jesus?
Yeah, like...
Okay.
For the time in which it was portrayed, mm-hmm. supposed to be very, like, attractive.
Right.
Now, all that... is weird to me.
Yeah. But all that is to say, like, I think it's incredibly valuable to be able to look at Jesus and see Jesus in your own culture, right? Mm-hmm. And so to know that Jesus, while he was a physical person who existed with a physical reality of some sort that we're not 100% sure about, but we know this is where he was,
right?
It's helpful for us to be able to imagine him fitting into whatever cultural context we need. It is unhelpful when we fail to imagine him fitting outside of that cultural context, right? Mm-hmm. When we say, oh, well, here's my Northern European white Jesus, and that's the only way that Jesus can appear. Right. With the horns.
Yeah. Wow.
When we
need a minute for that one.
Okay. Anyway, so when we say that's the only kind of Jesus, and we look to someone else who says, well, I see Jesus as black, or I see Jesus as Latinx, or I see Jesus as Asian, or whatever that might be, and we say, no, that's wrong, right? Or that's sinful, or that's preventing people from seeing the truth. Like, that's when it becomes problematic. There's nothing wrong with picturing Jesus in your cultural context.
Right.
There's a problem when it's preventing you from experiencing that outside of that. And so I think that's a fundamental piece for me, too, is bringing Jesus back to the realities that it's bigger than our own cultural context.
And ultimately, Jesus's identity is not necessarily tied to your cultural identity. It can exist outside of that.
Yeah. Thank goodness, right?
Right.
Because if Jesus is tied to my cultural identity, then Jesus is just another jerk on Twitter.
It's real bleak.
I don't need
that. I don't like it.
But I think that does help us. So that's kind of who Jesus was. And then there's what Jesus did.
Yeah.
And I think we maybe have an unfair assumption that we know what Jesus did. Is that too harsh?
I think we're very overly confident in our understanding of what Jesus actually laid down when he was here.
Yeah. Ooh, I like that. What he laid down? Yeah. Well, because it's, it's got like the double meanings of like laying down his life and also laying down a sweet track. It's great.
DJ Jesus.
DJ JC. Yeah. Rocking it all night.
Along with Viking Jesus.
I'll be here for three nights, folks. Yeah. Third day I'm out. Anyway. That went weird. Okay. So things that we're missing are fundamental pieces of Jesus' teaching. Mm-hmm. If we were to say, okay, look at Jesus' teaching. This is a football of Jesus' teaching. What do we think that central teaching is that we often miss or misunderstand or think we understand but are doing incorrectly? What is that? What's the fundamental building block?
Okay, so to back it up a little bit, I think for me, the fundamental building block of my faith is love the Lord your God with all your heart, all your soul, all your mind, love your neighbor as yourself. And that was like Jesus's sort of spiel when he was asked
That was a good spiel.
What he laid down, right?
He said, what's the most important law in the commandments?
Right.
Here it is.
And so to
me, I'm going
to
give you two.
Yes. simplifying is tough.
He is the Son of God.
Right.
So.
Dual nature, two commandments. I get it.
Makes sense.
Yeah. Which one is which? I don't really know.
Doesn't matter.
Anyway, so I kind of, fixate on that to me is like the fundamental building block. And then I think it is deceptively simple and it is extremely complicated.
Yeah.
So, even though I feel like I have a grasp on that being like a fundamental, I don't know that I necessarily have a grasp on what that looks like.
No, I think that's really helpful because, if we take it back to our analogy, right, everybody in that room already knew what a football was, and yet they needed to come back to that central idea to remember what that means and, how they hold it, how they throw it, how they treat it. And I think we need to come back to that same teaching, right? There's probably most of us would say, love the Lord your God with all your heart, your soul, love your neighbor as yourself. We could probably, if we really thought about it and kind of broke it down, we could probably get back to that as a central foundational teaching of Jesus. But I do think, I think you're right on that we missed that point. Do you think we miss it because we oversimplify it or do you think we miss it because we overcomplicate it?
I think we miss it because we oversimplify it, and sort of the reason I think that is because I realized I don't really understand what Jesus has to say about sin in general.
Ooh, yeah.
You know, because he seems to talk about it and react to it in different ways in different contexts. Like, it seems very reliant on the individual and the situation, and I suspect for me that that's because of the central tenet that applies to that we don't understand.
Okay.
So to me, it feels like he goes back to that in like every interaction and every conversation that he has about sin.
So does it feel like to you, does it feel like you're missing a component in order to make that connection? Or do you feel like it's just, we need to keep meditating on it and to keep experiencing it?
Well, I think the connection is there.
Yeah.
I think that there's so much extra noise that it becomes difficult to find that connection, if that makes sense.
Yeah, all right. So I think we've got a couple of biblical stories that maybe we can point to as kind of some examples of this. So we have in John 4, Jesus meets this woman at the well. She's a Samaritan woman.
Yep.
She's Samaritan, which is automatically a problem for Jews. Not necessarily sinful, but not great.
Right.
Tracing back to people who probably committed sin in the eyes of the Jewish people.
Sure.
And she's a woman, so Jesus definitely shouldn't be talking to her. And then Jesus comes and finds out that she's been married seven times and now is living with someone who's not her husband.
Considered somewhat of a loose woman at the time.
Hard to say. It's weird. It's not a great situation. And yet Jesus definitely embraces that scenario. Jesus does not in any way call her sinful.
Right.
Doesn't call her out for inappropriate behavior or say, go and sin no more. Jesus calls to her and says, I'm the water of life, and offers this opportunity to enter into this new thing. Now you put that up against I'm trying to think of a good example of this. You know, any of the times when Jesus is in conversation with the scribes and the Pharisees, mm-hmm. who are the righteous and the religious leaders of yeah. Israel at the time.
Theoretically not doing much culturally that's considered sinful.
Right. According to their culture, right? Trying to uphold the law.
Right.
And yet Jesus calls them out time and time again for corrupt behaviors mm-hmm. or for hypocrisy yeah. or, and, you know, is pretty unscathing in, mm-hmm. in the critiques of those yeah. areas. And so I think that kind of highlights this conflict that you're bringing to our attention mm-hmm. that clearly there's something about loving the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, and mind and loving your neighbor as yourself that we are missing.
Yeah.
There's something about this foundational teaching that seems like it should be so easy.
Yeah.
And yet the religious leaders of the day were screwing it up. Yeah. And I think we are often too quick to place ourselves in the shoes of the woman, which we all are, mm-hmm. But we're too easily not placing ourselves in the the shoes of the Pharisees, yeah. which we also are.
Yep.
And that's, you know, the tension that we live in is that mm-hmm. we are both of those yeah. both of those things.
Yep.
And Jesus loves us in both of those mm-hmm. things, but Jesus also speaks to us in both of those things. Jesus speaks to us in the words of comfort to the woman, and Jesus speaks to us in the words of what's the word I'm looking for? Conviction,
yes.
right? When we're kind of accusation and saying, look, this is not right,
right.
That he does to the Pharisees, mm-hmm. that both of those are a part of the elements.
Yeah. It seems to me, too, that there's always an element, and, you know, I say this loosely, and I'm not a professional. I'm not a Bible professional.
That's all right.
But it seems like there's an element of concern with who else is affected, what the peripheral circumstances are mm-hmm. whenever mm-hmm. he encounters somebody, you know, like the woman at the well. You know, he's, I think, much less concerned with, like, her actual, you know, culturally, you know, appropriate or inappropriate actions
yeah.
and more concerned with who is being hurt along the way.
Yeah.
And the same, I think, for the Pharisees and mm-hmm. who are you affecting with your actions, you know?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
it seems like there's that element as well, mm-hmm. which I think you can make a connection back to the, you know, love the Lord your God with all your heart, all your soul, mm-hmm. all your mind, love your neighbor as yourself. So, I mean, it all kind of seems to come back. And I think I just don't really understand that interplay.
Yeah,
which I think is crucial, and I'm gonna say that most of us probably
I think that's great.
Really understand that.
Yeah, I think that's really helpful, and I think we could probably do an entire episode just on that piece, right?
Sure.
We could come back and talk.
And we
about
don't
that.
Like relativity, right? Like,
no, we don't. Yeah.
We want rules in yeah. a box,
and unless it's a theory of one by a guy named Einstein, then we're cool with it. But
oh, sir, but he had the mustache for it, right. So.
And the hair.
Yes. Very all convincing.
Right. So we've got who Jesus was, and uh-huh. we've got what Jesus taught, and then there's what Jesus did, mm-hmm. which I think is kind of the third elemental piece of this faith that we also often think we know, right? Because
right.
we all know the story of Good Friday and Easter. Oh, yeah, Jesus
sure.
died. Like,
yeah.
you know, every children's sermon that I right. give, somebody's going to say, Jesus died on the cross, right? We,
yeah.
we know it, right? Right? We know that. But are we really aware of that foundational element mm-hmm. and what that means
yeah.
for what it or for what it goes going forward? Because there's that sense of, okay, Jesus died for our sins. But then the question is, well, why?
Mm-hmm.
Why did that matter?
Yeah.
And then you get into all sorts of atonement theories that most of us don't, including those of us who do this for a living,
sure.
don't necessarily fully understand or even fully agree with all of them, right?
Yeah. Even just reciting the Apostles' Creed is like, holy
yeah.
moly.
Yeah.
Like,
there's a lot of stuff in there, right?
Right?
So, there, you know, there's why did Jesus die for our sins? There's how did that work? There's why does the resurrection matter?
Mm-hmm.
Right? All of those pieces play into this story that we kind of take for granted.
Yeah.
And, you know, as much credit as we give to it on Easter, right? Obviously, we have this huge celebration. It's a big deal. We draw a lot of attention to it. And yet, it seems like an elemental piece of our faith that we haven't really taken the time to dive into and haven't
right.
really taken the time to say, how is this really affecting my life?
Right.
Not just my eternal salvation. How is this right. affecting my life right now?
Right.
Because I think that the resurrection in particular, the crucifixion and the resurrection has much more to do, especially if you're looking at it from the disciples' perspective, has much more to do with how they are changed in that moment
mm-hmm.
than changing them for some future thing.
Right. Sounds great.
I thought you might have a comment there. That's
no,
right.
I mean, I think that's really interesting. And we are very preoccupied with the end result, right?
Yes.
It's, you know, oh, are you going to heaven or hell? You
mm-hmm.
know, which another thing, apparently we don't understand.
BS, yeah.
I've learned recently.
You just learned recently that we don't understand heaven and hell?
Yes. I went to a Southern Baptist college. Like,
oh,
it was
yeah.
taken
yeah,
for granted
it all
that, like,
out
everybody's
there.
Halfway to hell. Like,
okay.
I mean,
halfway to hell is halfway to heaven. I'm right. just saying, that's in the middle.
Is it? I feel like that's 3/4 of the way away from heaven, though.
So are you starting in a benign center?
I would think.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, I misunderstood the analogy then. I assumed halfway was like...
Halfway in between. Yeah. yeah. Oh, boy.
So look at this. We already got ourselves lost.
Yeah.
Anyway, so you grew up in a culture where it was assumed.
Yeah.
But yeah, so heaven and hell.
So recently on. Have learned that there are, I don't know if alternative theories is the word for it, but
okay.
that there are different schools of thought
yeah.
potentially coming to the forefront
yeah.
in modern times about our understanding of heaven and hell and how maybe that's actually not accurate and we yeah. don't really know and
yeah, yeah, yeah.
that kind of thing. What were we saying? Oh, end result. We're focused on the end result. You know, ultimate, like, salvation. Where are you going? But I think that there's a piece of it that we lose about what does that look like for our lives? How are you redeemed in your yes. life? Because, yeah. I mean, this sounds anti-Christian, and it obviously it's not.
That's all right.
But
we'll rephrase
it. If it doesn't
it if
matter
necessary.
Until the end, then why focus on it now?
Oh, yeah, I hear that.
You know?
Yeah, if my salvation only matters on did I at some point accept Jesus right before
right.
I died, then
right.
why not go and have a good time now, yuck it right. up, and then, oh, I'm about to die.
Not to say you can't have a good
time
Jesus. And somewhat yuck it up and be a Christian. I'm not saying,
right.
like, yuck it. There's different versions of yuck it up and have a
sure.
good time. I'm saying you can have a good life and a good time.
Right.
You don't have to be a monk.
Yeah. No, I you're,
maybe monks have fun. I don't know.
I'm sure they have fun in their own way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Chanting.
But cool. I oatmeal?
I don't know.
He's not.
It's like what a monk eats.
No, Quakers. Quakers eat oatmeal.
Oh.
They're not monks.
That's right.
Different. Yeah. Monks brew beer. Anyway, so yeah, I think your point stands that I think if the only thing that matters is what's after this life,
mm-hmm.
then why bother with it now?
Right.
Why bother showing up on Sunday morning?
Right.
If that's not what matters.
Yeah.
Or that makes it a works thing where I have to show up Sunday because I have to get so many Sundays in before
yeah,
I die. Right.
It's like a points system.
Right, exactly. I got to build it up.
It's like the Egyptians where they're weighing the feather in your heart and you get a... Do you know anybody?
I don't know that one, but that's okay.
Okay.
I know football.
Mythology,
you know
yeah.
Egyptian mythology. Yeah. It's fine. That's all good.
Yeah.
So I think that point does mm-hmm. stand that... the fundamental piece of our faith is that it really does affect us now, not just in some future place.
Right.
And I think that's where we miss the fundamental because we focus so much on this idea of, oh, salvation, but
mm-hmm.
salvation starts now.
Right.
In fact, I was listening to this other thing about the word eternity the other day, and that the more ancient understanding of eternity isn't this future thing that eventually starts that goes on forever and ever and ever, but the eternal is the eternal now. Like
oh.
that every moment you're actually living in eternity because every moment you're in is actually now. You're never in the future. You're never in the past. You're always in now. And so
right.
you are always in eternity. You're
just
always
a never
in now.
Ending now.
You're in a never nice. Ending now. And so God, as part of that, is actually outside of our understanding of this linear time.
Mm-hmm.
And so when we refer to God as eternal, we're referring to God being outside of our notion of, you know, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday,
mm-hmm.
and God operates beyond that. And so
yeah.
our salvation can both be some future thing for us in this timeline, and it can be very much true for us right now in
yeah.
this life and in this moment, which gets us into a whole other idea of proleptic eschatology, which is my favorite big seminary word to throw
Latin
around.
Latin for
proleptic eschatology?
I pee in my pants.
Yeah, that's it. That's
okay.
what it is.
Yeah.
Yeah. No. So proleptic eschatology. I don't even know if it's Latin.
It sounds very medical, which is why I landed
is.
On Latin.
So proleptic comes from prolepsis, which is this idea of inbreaking, and eschatology would be like a study of the end times, the eschaton,
mm-hmm.
and that probably is Latin. And so the proleptic eschatology is the breaking in of God's final result into our life right now.
Okay.
That even though like the story of Revelation, right? If we want to
mm-hmm.
take that as kind of the final victory, right? Even though that hasn't happened in our linear time,
mm-hmm.
proleptic eschatology would say, but it has happened in your life now because God is outside of our understanding of time.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. We all need a breath.
Right. I need a snack.
There we go. Let's take that one in. So I think that one definitely we dove a little deeper than a fundamental
yeah.
piece of faith when we got that one. When we hit proleptic eschatology. Yeah, we were doing trick plays when
yeah.
we got to proleptic eschatology. But
the Immaculate Reception.
You learned something today.
I did.
That's good.
Very proud of that one.
Any other fundamentals of faith? So we got
fundamentals.
What were some things that we hit? We hit creation, which I
yeah.
think is great. We hit the Bible.
Yeah.
We hit Jesus in a couple of different forms, which I think is critical. We hit salvation, which is, right up there.
That's kind of a big one. Yeah, I mean, I guess another one, and we talk about this in the Apostles' Creed too, is the resurrection of the body.
Mm-hmm. Resurrection of our body,
right.
not of Jesus,
ooh,
but
yeah,
of our body.
We already
body.
Know that
yeah.
happened somehow, but like, what?
Yeah, I would say that that's less of a fundamental. I hear you. I think it is something that we have
that's,
lots of questions
fair.
About,
yeah.
but I don't think that that's like where we start.
It's not where we start, but we do list it off. Boom, 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 boom. Right there.
Oh, it's central.
Yeah.
Right, but I don't think it's the.
It's not this is a football.
Yeah.
It's,
yeah.
This is a field goal.
I like that field goal is your
resurrection
like next,
of the body.
That's your advanced level. with that, hey, do you want to do my part? Since I did all the Patrick stuff, you can do my thing at the end.
See if I can do it.
All right. Take us out. You got it.
Hey, if you liked this podcast or any of our other podcasts, you can find us wherever great podcasts, including this one, are found. At
that was
iTunes,
solid.
Spotify, SoundCloud, or our website.
Yeah.
As always, write
what's
in.
What's our website?
BeyondSundayPodcast.org.
.com. That was close. That was good. Yeah.
It should be .org.
What if they have something they want to say to us? If they want to send
you can email it. Us.
Yeah, you can. BeyondSundayPodcast@gmail.com. There it is. You did great, Elise. Good
Thank
work.
You.
I'll give you a fist bump for that one. All right. Thank you all for listening. Have a great week. We'll see you next week on Beyond Sunday.